My name is Ben Barrell, and this is Bob Dylan Album by Album, a podcast that brings you an in-depth look at each Bob Dylan studio recording, record by record. Welcome to our second look at the freewheeling. I hope you're enjoying this season so far. It's fun to look at a classic album, isn't it? And it's fun to kind of explore songs that you know so well and hopefully find out something new about them as well. We'll get to that next episode in just a second. First, though, let me remind you of a couple of bits that are going out elsewhere. Blood on the Tracks, Season 3 being one. This is a brand new podcast, well, a new season of a podcast anyway, from the people that brought you Disgraceland, which is a really popular podcast. It's in a similar format to that, and from the makers of that episode, of that podcast, as I say. It's a look at Dylan's life from 66 right through to now, a fictionalised account of his life. I've had so many great messages from you about this, so thank you so much for listening to it, and thank you for messaging me about it as well, and it's good to see you're enjoying it as well. It was so much fun to write that season. I did it at the end of last year, and I really enjoyed weekly kind of working out how we're going to tell the Dylan story. The latest episode that's just gone out actually is on Bob's Born Again phase. We explore that fever dream he had on stage, that strange hotel room where Jesus appeared before him. That was so much fun to write, and I'll put a link to that in the episode's description. There's also a link in the episode's description to the Patreon show. This is Bob Dylan Album by Album Extra, a weekly show just like this one, but it runs throughout the year, and you get loads of different types of episodes on there, line by line episodes, deep dives, and also interviews too. Let's say hello to you if you have recently subscribed to that. Hi to Patrick. Hi to Dag Akari. Hi to Ted Evans. Hello, Eli Pokemon Master. Hi to Magnus Sigurdsson. Hi, Roger Blackburn. Hello to Thomas Rasmussen. Hi to Taylor Dahlgren. And hi to Michael Rackert as well. I've probably butchered a couple of those last names there, so I can only apologise. You can subscribe to the Patreon feed right now. There's a link in this episode's description, and there'll be a clip from an episode the Patreons can enjoy at the end of this one. Actually, it's linked to this one. I did a little episode on Suze Rotolo and all about her time with Dylan, including one particular song that he wrote about her, and she is obviously a big influence on this album. I mean, she appears on the front cover for a start. Speaking of that, that is where we focus today's episode. We have a look at the album's artwork and also two more brilliant songs as we go back to that classic 1963 album.
I got a bird that whistles, I got a bird that sings.
It's a freezing cold day in New York, and Bob Dylan is frantically tidying his apartment. Today, a photographer will arrive to shoot pictures for his as-yet-untitled second album. Sat on the couch in the same room as him is a woman. Before the day is out, she'll become part of pop culture forever. She'll appear on a front cover of an album that will go down in history. The record in question was called The Freewheeling, and her name was Suze Rotolo. Don Hudstein was the photographer that day. He spent the morning in the apartment taking pictures of Dylan, some with his guitar, some sat at an old chair that he'd found in the street a few weeks earlier, some stood up without his six string on his own. Dylan had one outfit, a look he'd picked out carefully that morning, showing he was more than image conscious at this point. But the real shift happens when his girlfriend, Suze Rotolo, was asked to join her boyfriend in front of the lens. She forgets whose suggestion it was. Years later, writing in her autobiography, A Freewheeling Time, she says it could have been Bob or the photographer or even Billy James, the Columbia Records representative who was there to ensure they got the right shot for the LP. But someone suggested it. Someone took one look at her and saw she, like her boyfriend, had star quality. Suze felt self-conscious when she was first asked, but Billy quickly made her feel at home, and her obvious chemistry with the album's author would ensure the photos dripped with personality. After a few shots in the apartment, Don suggested that they move outside. Bob grabbed his suede jacket, another conscious choice apparently, especially considering it was freezing outside, not particularly weather for that suede jacket. Suze almost did the same. She put on an impractical coat too. She bought it from Italy recently. But outsmarting Bob, she had thrown on one of his bulky sweaters underneath it all to keep her warm. They walked down Jones Street and then West 4th. Suze remembers in her book how cold it was that day. They had to walk down the centre of the road because the pavements were too slippery with ice. The snow in the road was fluffy, though, and filthy from the traffic. They horsed around trying to keep warm and the camera snapped away. At one point in the middle of Jones Street, approximately 50 feet from West 4th Street, they huddled together. Don's camera clicked and the iconic image was born. No one knew that in that moment, of course. In fact, soon after the image was captured, Suze was back inside, watching the whole thing from a window, as Dylan was subjected to some solo shots. But they needn't have bothered. The shot call earlier was not only a tender moment, but an image of the generation they belonged to. The loving couple hunched together on that snowy New York street looked intelligent, socially conscious even, fashionable, urbane. But with that hunch from Dylan, they also looked somewhat different, authentic and alternative. Suze expressed her surprise that Columbia chose the image rather than Dylan on his own, especially considering this album was still doing the job of launching Bob Dylan to the public after his debut's sort of misfire. And it's not like Dylan chose the image either, it wasn't down to him, although he did say he was happy with the choice. Thing is, whilst Dylan walking down the street on his own would have done the job, here he looks almost extremely relatable. He's like a Hollywood leading man with this woman on his arm. He looks even like a heartthrob in this picture, compared to that image from his debut album, that is. Suze knows how iconic the image is. She says in her autobiography, "It's one of those cultural markers that influence the look of album covers, precisely because of its casual down-home spontaneity and sensibility. Most album covers were carefully staged and controlled to terrific effect on the Blue Note album covers and to not so great effect on the perfectly poised and clean-cut pop and folk albums. Whoever was responsible for choosing that particular photograph for the freewheeling Bob Dylan really had an eye for a new look." The shot came in the February, only weeks after Suze had returned from that infamous Italy trip we heard about in the last episode of this podcast. And while we found traces of that trip on the song Girl from the North Country, it's even more transparent on track 4, Down the Highway.
Well, I'm walking down the highway with my suitcase in my hand. Yes, I'm walking down the highway with my suitcase in my hand. Lord, I really miss my baby. She's in some foreign land.
Down the Highway is a blues song that has a riff like a knife. Of the song, Dylan said, "What made the real blues singers so great is they were able to state all the problems they had, but at the time they were standing outside of them and they could look at them, and in that way they had them beat." As well as that bluesy riff, we also have bluesy lines like, "Well, I've been gambling so long, Lord, I ain't got much more to lose." But the explicit mention of Suze and her situation is in the lines on the fifth verse. They read, "Well, the ocean took my baby stole my heart from me. Yes, the ocean took my baby took my heart from me. She packed it all up in a suitcase, Lord, she took it away to Italy." Suze herself mentions the song in her autobiography. She details a letter that Bob wrote to her whilst she was still in Italy studying. He says he had been to a recording session and Suze was, quote, in two of the songs he cut, one being this and the other being Bob Dylan's Blues. He also says she was in the track I'm in the Mood for You, which comes from this time too, although this seems to be more of an afterthought compared to those other two songs. Down the Highway, though, seems to deal with the Suze being away situation in a slightly different way compared to others. Compare it, say, to a song like Boots of Spanish Leather. We can instantly see the difference. Both songs seem to deal with Suze being away, or at least pining for a lover who's not there. But while in Boots we hear Dylan pining, almost dwelling in his misery, here it's much more subjective, almost. Like he says in that quote from earlier, he's almost able to stand outside of his problems as a narrator.
Well, meet me in the middle of the ocean, and we'll leave this old highway behind. Well, the ocean took my baby,
My baby stole my heart from me. Yeah, the ocean took my baby. My baby took my heart from me.
This song was recorded on the 9th of July 1962 with John Hammond still in the producer's chair. Interestingly, this was way before Dylan goes to London and Mrs. Sue's in Italy. In fact, she'd only just left the month before to begin her studies.
I'm your masters of war.
And there's a song he writes from the other side of his London trip. It's the track that also is before this one on the LP. It was recorded in April 63. By that time, Dylan had not only been to London and back, but he'd picked up an old song on the way. And it was a song that would form the basis for Bob's classic, Masters of War.
It hide behind discs. I just don't want you to know I can see through your masks. You that never done nothing but build to destroy. You play with my world like it's your little toy.
Like we've already seen, that London trip exposed Dylan to songs that would influence him for a few of his early albums, notably starting with the songs he records in April for the Freewheeling LP, Girl from the North Country being a good example, but also this one in particular too. The basis for Masters of War comes from a traditional song called Notaman Town. This similarity between the songs was brought into focus by Izzy Young, who ran the Folklore Centre in the village. In the same month that Dylan records the song, Izzy had organised a Bob concert. He had begged Jean Ritchie, the famous mother of folk, to come to the concert because, well, at the time Dylan was still unknown and Izzy was desperate to find Bob an audience. In fact, Izzy was frantic at this time. So Jean eventually went, after much persuading, and apparently was underwhelmed by this scruffy, nervous, unprepared and mumbling singer up on stage. However, she noticed in the performance a new song by Dylan sounded pretty familiar. It was, of course, Masters of War. She recognised the melody from her family's version of Notaman Town, which appeared on her album Mountain Hearth and Home.
In Notaman Town, a soul would look up. Not a soul would look up, not a soul would look down.
In fact, the songs were so close, after Ritchie demanded a writing credit, the dispute ended in a legal settlement. Dylan's lawyers paid Ritchie £5,000 against any further claims. While this traditional song is often called an American folk song, it has been suggested it actually comes from an English song of medieval origin brought to North America in the early colonial era. And there is evidence to suggest that Dylan really picked up on it during his English trip. It certainly stuck with him, and the similarities between the two songs are, well, striking.
Not a soul would look up. Not a soul would look up. Not a soul would look up.
Hear that bell that death planes. Hear that bell all the bombs. Hear that hide behind walls. Hear that hide behind discs. I just don't want you to know I can see through your masks.
Of the song, Dylan says, "I've never written anything like that before. I don't sing songs which hope people will die, but I couldn't help it with this one. The song is a sort of striking out, a feeling of what can you do?" In one of his most counter-culturey moments, of which there are actually a surprising few compared to your average non-Dylan fan's assumptions, Dylan sings of the profiteering from war, the business of it almost, but more overtly the fact that those who organise it, the masters, are the ones who are ultimately least affected by it. He sings, "You hide in your mansion while the young people's blood flows out of their bodies and is buried in the mud." Later, things get a little more cantankerous, as, like in that quote from him, Dylan ramps up his disdain. He sings, "Let me ask you one question, is your money that good? Will it buy you forgiveness? Do you think that it could? I think you will find, when your death takes its toll, all the money you made will never buy back your soul." In the final verse, he brings it all out to sea. He sings, And I hope that you die, and I hope your death will come soon. I'll follow your casket by the pale afternoon, and I'll watch while you're lowered down to your deathbed, and I'll stand over your grave till I'm sure that you're dead. Looking back over Dylan's career from our current vantage point, we can see that he has done this time and time again. His difficulty with authority has dominated verses in many songs, whether it be clearly calling out leaders like he does here, or more subtler times, where sons have been called chicken, for example. But it's his courage you have to admire here, his refusal to sugarcoat anything. But also, I feel this is often what sets him apart from his contemporaries. Sure, protest songs like this, if we can indeed call it that, are pretty commonplace with any number of singer-songwriters from this or any other era. But Dylan, possibly inspired by his hero Woody Guthrie, always had a bite to his songs. While Guthrie embodied that in his look and attitude, Dylan channeled it into songs like this. The aggression and bile at the end of Masters of War is a prelude to his snarky Positively 4th Street, or even Ballad in Plain D. The aggression is captured in that repeated use of you, the most finger-pointy word. It's also divisive too. Dylan is constantly drawing lines between you and I. He sets this out straight away. In the first verse, he sings, "You that build the big guns, you that build the death planes, you that build all the bombs," etc. And then we move to, "I just want you to know I can see through your masks." And of course, he can't resist a little biblical reference either. In the third verse, this comes with, "Like Judas of old, you lie and deceive." But is Dylan singing about a particular moment or person here? Well, in 2001, he connected this song to President Eisenhower. On the 17th of January 1961, Eisenhower gave his farewell address from the Oval Office. In his speech, he warned that we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. In the interview, Bob said, "Masters of War is supposed to be a pacifistic song against war. It's not an anti-war song. It's speaking against what Eisenhower was calling a military-industrial complex as he was making his exit from the presidency. That spirit was in the air, and I picked it up." Looking at these two tracks from the freewheeling side by side, it's interesting to compare them. It really gives us a snapshot of the time, but also a snapshot of Bob's life too. Down the Highway was written about his lover, who he'd soon attempt to see on a European trip. On that trip, he'd be inspired to write a song about the other thing on his mind, social issues. What these two songs really represent is how Dylan is synthesizing his surroundings into his songs, whether it be what's happening in his home country or what's happening in his love life. It is informing the young artist. With an impressive few songs already inked onto the freewheeling tracklist, the LP was shaping up to be the real breakthrough for Dylan. But looking back now, where does this album sit within his back catalogue? That's something we look at next time.
Oxford town, everybody's got their heads bowed down. Sun don't shine above the ground, ain't going down to Oxford town.
That is it for today's episode. You can share your thoughts on The Freewheeling and where it ranks for you in terms of Dylan's great albums. Is it at the top? Is it somewhere in the middle? Do you not consider it a great album? Let me know your thoughts, please. Always keen to hear your thoughts on every single album we cover on the podcast. You can tweet at Bob Dylan Podcast. You can also Instagram me there as well. I'm on Instagram too, Benjamin Burrell, and on Twitter at Ben Burrell. As I said at the start of the show, there was a Patreon episode, an extra episode of this podcast all about, well, this point of Dylan's life and his relationship with Suze and a particularly wonderful song that he wrote for her and about her. And we covered that in the episode. In fact, we dedicated the entire episode to it. That is available on the Patreon feed right now. And here is a clip of it. Suze Rotolo was always going to be more than Dylan's chick. Sure, she was a muse for Bob and a brilliant one too. But she was also his curator, his guide, and ultimately his comforter. She was his partner for politics and new thinking. If anything, she was more active than Bob in that area. She was one of the people who helped to make a young Dylan. And her dignity and moral compass displayed throughout the years until her death in 2011 is almost unheard of in celebrity today. There was no salacious tales of Greenwich Village, no gossip-mongering headlines, no money ploys from her connections. Just a, quote, full-blooded Italian who wanted to make the world better. She was nothing short of brilliant. It's no wonder she was on Dylan's mind. Listen to that episode and a whole host of others on the Patreon feed right now. The link is in this episode's description. Thank you for listening today. We shall take our third look at the freewheeling next week. I will see you then. Take care.